Hello, this is Andy Bombeck, and welcome to another Mojo Music, where I'll be reading articles from Mojo Magazine, along with playing snippets of music. Please let Sun Sounds Radio know if you enjoyed today's program, or how it could be improved. Okay, as I mentioned last week, I'm going to continue reading articles from the March 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. We're going to start off with an interview with Donovan and the late 1960s. And then some of the 50 greatest songs from Paul Weller, who played with Style Council and The Jam. And a classic album review of Pretzel Logic by Steely Dan. And we start off with the interview with Donovan, titled Catches the Wind. Attuned to Aquarian frequencies and on a mission to marry jazz, blues, folk, and pop with bardic poetry, Donovan Leitch's late 1960s were golden. But after hits galore in Britain and America, encounters with the Fabs and the Maharishi, and a pre-adorned love affair, the dawning 1970s demanded a rethink. The amount we did was phenomenal. Recall the singer and his merry band. We'd done all we set out to do. We'd invaded pop culture. Donovan, I was born in Glasgow. My mom, uncles, and aunts sang Irish songs and Scottish songs, and my father read poetry and monologues. When we moved to Hatfield, I listened to the Everly Brothers and Buddy Holly. I discovered the Beats and jazz, met Gypsy Dave, Mills, artist and trusted friend, and joined the St. Albans bohemian scene. The incredible revolution of ideas. I'd blend it with jazz, blues, folk, music, poetry, and pop music. It didn't matter to me whether it would be popular. Peter Eden. I worked at the Studio Club in Southend and managed R&B group The Cops and Robbers. I said, there's room for an English Bob Dylan. And they said, we know a guy. They got Donovan down and he had the Dylan cap and This Machine Kills on his guitar. And he played some really good songs. Songwriter Jeff Stevens said, why don't we manage him? We took him to Southern Music on Denmark Street and recorded some demos. To get him exposure, we took him to Ready Steady Go. He was unsigned, but we got him a 3-week run. Dana Gillespie. We shared managers, and I was in the Ready Steady Go green room with Davy Jones, Bowie. We often went down, he'd network, and I'd dance, and Donovan did Catch the Wind. He was a gentle soul. We were off the folk scene. It was all about Burt Janich and Davy Graham. Not about being huge and getting rich. Just about playing gigs to make enough to keep going as a musician. But then it made number 4 and he was a star. And here's a little bit of that song, Catch the Wind by Donovan.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm heart of your loving mind. To feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. But I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes I'd find. found me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. Twould make me sing. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind.
Oh. Once he did Ready, Steady, Go, the record companies had started calling. Decca, EMI, Les Cox from Pi, kept ringing and said, "We will look after him." Then he did his first album, What's Been Did and What's Been Hid, and it hit number 3 in May 1965. Skip Allen. I was 16 doing sessions for Southern Music, and there was me, Brian Locking on bass, Gypsy Dave, and Donovan. He dressed in jeans and t-shirt and had a limp from when he had polio as a kid. We did the first album. It was quick, pretty much first takes and live. This was February, March, then in April, we did the NME Poll Winners concert at the Empire Pool, Wembley. We were on with the Animals, the Kinks, them, and the Beatles, which was very exciting. Sean Phillips. I'd played in Greenwich Village with Tim Hardin, and I did a week at the Purple Onion in Toronto and saw Ravi Shankar, who sat me down with his sitar and showed me how to play it. I came to London in 1964 and recorded a solo record, 1965's I'm a Loner. I met Don when I was buying strings at Ivor Menren's music store. We started talking and he said, "Do you want to go smoke a joint?" I became his accompanist. He recorded my song, The Little Tin Soldier, and I played some 12-string on Fairy Tale. Paul. Fairy Tale hit number 20 in October 1965. It has the track Sunny Good Street on it. And with that, Donovan is starting to really develop. He's moving away from straight folk music, adding in jazz, getting his own direction. He was writing all the time. He worked hard. And here's a little bit of Sunny Good Street by Donovan.
On the firefly platform on Sunny Good Street, a violent hash smoker shook a chocolate machine, involved in an eating scene, smashing into neon streets in their stoneness, smearing their eyes on the crazy colored goddess, listening to sounds of Mingus, mellow, fantastic. My, they sigh. My, they sigh.
Donovan. Management heavyweight Alan Klein saw me on the Ed Sullivan Show in April 1965. At the end, all the performers had to smile and take a final bow. I refused. He made a mental note to watch me. He contacted producer Mickey Most and said, "This guy looks like he knows what he wants to do. Why don't you call him?" Mickey Most. I thought, yes, I could be of some assistance. Good writer. I liked the songs. I liked his approach. And I liked his lyrics. He was very hip at the time. John Cameron. I was listening to John Coltrane, Mingus, and doing jazz cabaret at the Take One in London. Bassist Spike Heatley was in the house band, and he said how his mate, Ashley Kozak, had taken over the management of Donovan, and they were looking for an arranger. I thought, why not? I went to Ashley's flat, and the walls were purple with silver moons and stars on them, and we sat down, and Donovan played Sunshine Superman. And halfway through, Chaz Chandler came in and told us he'd just found this guitarist in New York called Jimi Hendrix. And here's a little bit of the popular song Sunshine Superman by Donovan.
Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out easy, but I changed my way. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while you're gonna be mine, I know it. We'll do it in style, 'cause I made my mind up. You're going to be mine, I'll tell you right now. Ain't a trick in a book, and a baby, to have a little scene. When I say we'll be cool, I think that you know what I mean. We stood on a beach at sunset.
Donovan, we started Sunshine Superman in Abbey Road in December 65 with Mickey Most and super arranger John Cameron. John saw my songs as mini movies to soundtrack. John, what's incredible was Mickey gave us this freedom to use string quartets, oboes, bassoons. He let me play jazz solos on harpsichords just because I fancied it. With Sunshine Superman, Spike and I decided to use two bass players and a double keyboard, Morley harpsichord, and the double bass and bass guitar together gave us a lot of depth and texture at the bottom end. Mickey then got Jimmy Page to do the guitar and said, "That's the single." John Phillips. We played Carnegie Hall on February 19th, 1966. An amazing moment. I can't think of any Western musician who'd played sitar to a pop jazz classical audience before that. Then in March, we did 10 nights at LA Club The Trip and did recordings in CBS Studios on Sunset for Sunshine Superman. The recordings came out of jams. We'd do three or four takes, and each one I'd do a little different. Donovan. Then in June 1966, I was the first celebrity drug bust. But Gypsy and I had nothing in the flat. They had brought their own. The Beatles and the Stones were next. Chris Welch. I was in the Melody Maker office on Fleet Street, and Columbia A&R producer John Hammond came in. I wanted to talk to him about Gene Krupa and Benny Goodman. But he asked me how he could get in touch with Donovan. Donovan signed to Epic, a part of Columbia in the U.S., in June 1966. John, Sunshine Superman came out in July 1966, but only in the U.S., where it went to number one. Donovan then went to the States to do promotion, and I went back to pantomime. Donovan, I was being sued by Pi, as Alan Klein had signed me to Epic. So the single didn't come out in the UK until December 1966. The album then came out in the US in August and hit number 11, but didn't come out in the UK at all. But we kept going. John, there was a tour of Europe in Copenhagen. The audience started to slow hand clap. Apparently, they do that when they love you. We also played the Tryon Palace in Paris. Talk about good old-fashioned Parisian glitter. It was fun, no pressure, everyone knew the ropes. Chris, Donovan played the Royal Albert Hall on January 15, 1967, and that was a huge leap forward. One minute, he was a busker, an unknown folk singer. The next, a headliner at the Ultimate London venue. I reviewed it for Melody Maker and called him an audacious youth. It was ambitious. There was a string quartet and jazz men, Ronnie Ross on baritone, Danny Moss on tenor. John. In late 1967, we did the soundtrack to Ken Loach's Poor Cow. Donovan had written a tune to Christopher Logue's poem, Be Not Too Hard, for the opening titles. I turned up at the session. Ken was there, and the executive producer, Teddy Jones, said, Who's going to score the film? And Don pointed at me and said, He is. That was the first I'd heard about it. Donovan. In February 1968, the Beatles and I went to Rikneesh, India, to study transcendental meditation with the Maharishi Magi Yogi. I was playing finger-picking style guitar, and John Lennon said, How do you do that? I taught him, and John got it fast, and he wrote Dear Prudence and Julia. He said, I never knew my mom, and I want to write a song like you do, Donovan, about a childhood that I never had with my mom. I helped him write that song. It was very touching. And here's a little bit of that song, Julia, by the Beatles.
But I say it just to reach you, song of love, Julia, Julia, seashell eyes, windy smile calls me, so I sing the song of love, Julia.
John, as long as Mickey had hits, Mellow Yellow, Jennifer Juniper, and Hurdy Gurdy Man found success in the UK and US. He didn't mind what we did. I mean, the lineup for Jennifer Juniper was flute, oboe, bassoon, harp, bass, and shaker. That's not the usual lineup for a top five single. Mickey called me up on a Tuesday. Don wanted me to hear this song. I went to his cottage in Herefordshire. He played it. We talked about it. We went into the studio on Friday, and it got its first play on Radio Luxembourg on the Saturday. And here is some of that song, Jennifer Juniper. Yes, I think so. Is she pretty? Yes, ever. Donovan. Mickey was working with the Jeff Beck Group when we did Barbarenja in May 1969, so we did that with them. John, the amount of work we did between 66 and 70 was phenomenal. We had a string section that rode motorbikes. They'd be on Yamahas with their Strads strapped to their backs, going from studio to studio. It was the only way they'd get from one to the other on time. Donovan, when the 60s came to an end, we bought a yacht, me and Gypsy Dave. We called it Vagrant. The plan was to tour the world. My advisors were pleased, a year in tax exile. We got to Japan, and Jip and I realized we'd done all we set out to do. We'd invaded pop culture. We'd planted the seeds of change. My agent, Vic Lewis, nearly had a heart attack when he found out I would break the exile. He was on his knees at Tokyo Airport. I came home to my little cottage. Linda and I walked up to the woods, me with my guitar, and we sat in the field. We didn't say anything, and I started singing. And a cow came up and licked her face. We laughed and finally married. And now, the 50 greatest Paul Weller songs. And this is titled, Keep On Pushing. The first time I remember seeing and hearing the Jam was on the telly in 1979 performing the Eaton Rifles. I was 12 years old. Paul looked cool as fuck. Ricky Shades, I was in. 45 years later, it's still a fucking tune. The amazing thing is that he's never slacked off. I'm as big a Style Council fan as I am a fan of the Jam. One is just an extension of the other for me. The next stop on the journey. Then there was Real Wedge, where he learned, like I did, that there comes a point in the life of a working class boy, done good, where the Labor Party will try to integrate themselves with you. But the lineups at some of the gigs were great. Both he and Johnny Marr have told me of an amazing night in Newcastle where the Style Council and the Smiths shared the stage. Imagine that. The solo career has been one brilliant surprise after another. Me and our kids went to see him at Manchester Academy in 1992. Paul had been out of the game for what seemed like years. We were there out of blind faith. At some point during the gig, he says, "Here's something new for ya," and played Into Tomorrow. We'd never heard it before. He was back. And there was loads more to come. Wild Wood was and is and always will be one of the great tunes of my lifetime. It never ages. It's a song that every songwriter dreams of writing. White Horses off True Meanings blew me away when he sent it to me on some blank, faceless CD one morning. He bellied me about 12 hours later and said, "What do you think?" I made that noise you make when you puff out your cheeks. "What's that supposed to fucking mean?" he said. What have I learned from him? As a songwriter, that you never, ever stop learning. The people who are coming up behind you can teach you so much, and you should never stop listening. As a musician, not much, to be honest. As I'm not much of a musician, and he's a virtuoso. He's so far ahead of me, it's a fucking joke. And as a man, that I should probably, at some point, give up the booze. And that was written by Noel Gallagher of Oasis. And here's a short interview with Paul Weller titled Confessions of a Songwriter. 50 great tunes and then some in every shape and size. And still, there's no rest for Paul Weller. On a break at the end of another solo album campaign and a tour that showcased jam and style council classics, he reflects on the inspiration and obsession that power him forward. It makes you think, are you in control of this thing, or is it in control of you? He tells Danny Eccleston. It's June 27th, 2018, and Paul Weller is on stage at London's O2 Arena, sharply suited and booted, but it requires a double take to confirm it's him, because there's no gestalting with an Epiphone Casio, no tossing the silver mane, no frenzied gum-chewing. Weller, in fact, is respectfully crooning on days like these. The Quincy Jones Don Black song, best known for the Matt Montro version, in the opening scene of The Italian Job, where Rossano Brazzi drives his red Lamborghini Murata to a date with mafia-designated Doom. It's a show curated to celebrate Jones's 85th birthday. Quincy was sitting there on a settee on the stage because he's being interviewed between the songs, Weller recalls today. And as I'm coming off, he went, "That's a great version, brother. How fucking amazing is that?" Weller shakes his head in awe. What a fucking career, man. From Billie Holiday to Michael Jackson, it's mental, Inuit. What a fucking career. Words also applicable to the man in the sky blue jumper, indigo jeans, and monkey boots currently at the piano. In the live room of his Black Barn Studios, illustrating a point, he's showing Mojo the chords to the bridge section of You Do Something to Me, the almost perfect song he nearly didn't record, for some reason, that we shall get into later. Hanging on the Wire, he keens, as he does on 1995's Stanley Road LP, before admitting where he found said chords on a piece of sheet music left on a piano at the Minor Studios, Oxfordshire, and discovered during late sessions for 1993's Watershed Wild Wood. It's just one of 50 songs readers will find among 150 odd volunteered by Mojo writers tasked with selecting Weller's greatest. And just one of many stories of inspiration, appropriation, and craftful adaptation, evidence of the creative drive and musical curiosity that led him from the jam via the Style Council through multiple solo reinventions. As he takes his place among the artists who've been afforded Mojo's greatest songs treatment, including his beloved Beatles and The Who, he reflects on a recent public outing, recording Denny Lane's 1967 song, Say You Don't Mind, for BBC Radio 2's Piano Room. I love the lyrics on there. Stupid fish, you drank the pool, he says. Such clever words. It's weird that he only ever wrote that one classic tune, though. If that's inside you, I think you must be able to do more of it. And he should know. So, Paul Weller's 50 Greatest Songs. Have I even got that many? He laughs. Are you intrigued about what might be in there? Yeah, I'm still kind of hoping there's going to be some songs that aren't the usuals. Your Town Called Malice, or whatever. It'll be interesting to see if there are any I would select myself. Like what? Well, I'd have a problem naming 20, let alone 50. 10, maybe. Which songs should people talk about more? Well, for me, the two albums I'm most proud of are On Sunset and True Meanings. I don't think people know them that well. One of the things I'm trying to do next year is some gigs with an orchestra playing the whole of On Sunset. Rockets is an On Sunset song that got a lot of writers' votes. It starts with someone heading off into space, transcending in some way. Then the second half is about what keeps us earthbound. I suppose I was thinking of how some people just don't fit into boxes or systems, me included. I always felt that at school. Some people just aren't equipped for it and are always seen as being an outsider. I don't know what it's like now, but my generation were just fancy fodder. I would see a lot of my mates, the ones who were lucky enough to leave school before me. They'd wave at me through the factory windows as I was going to school, taking the piss. I was lucky because music helped me see beyond that. That there's the possibility of another world out there that I'm not part of yet. Without that, I don't know what I would have fucking done. Casual work, laboring, nothing academic, obviously. So I'm always very grateful to music for doing that, opening my eyes and showing me other possibilities. The Beatles did that, really. They were the catalyst. Do you remember your first attempts at songwriting? Well, I couldn't sing you one, but yeah, almost from the time I learned C, F, and G. I started to try to write a song. It was me and Steve Brooks getting together at school and then doing pubs and working men's clubs. We almost immediately started writing songs together. One of us would learn a new chord, like a major seventh, and you'd immediately write five songs with that chord in it. Then it was the Beatles songbook, and we would just mercilessly plunder that. On the first jam single, In the City, you sound fully formed. Well, that was the first song where I thought, this is our sound. I can remember writing it and rehearsing it with Rick and Bruce at the Shearwater Youth Club. Getting that down, that was really exciting. It felt like us, even though, obviously, it was heavily borrowed from The Who. And here's a little bit of that song, In the City, by The Jam. But it doesn't sound like any one Who song. While some of the chords and some of the melodic things are similar, I was obsessed with My Generation, that first two album. I pretty much rewrote the whole thing, really. I don't think Pete's ever really forgiven me. The idea of youth being important, of giving youth a voice, was really resonant. Well, it was a pretty desolate wilderness time. The mid-late 70s, London was a shithole, man. London was filthy. I first moved up in 1977, and there were the bin strikes, fucking shit everywhere, blackouts, a gloomy fucking time. The skinhead, suede head thing was finished by 1972, and I didn't feel there was any real identity for young people, for me included, really. And then punk happened, and it was just such a great, exciting time, and it felt like young people had a voice again and were back in the fucking driving seat musically. You still play older songs, jam and style council songs, live. But how do you decide which to play and which to leave out? Is it about how much sense those songs make to you now? Well, it's about whether I can sing them physically, but also emotionally, if I've got a connection with them still, if I can still find my way into the song. A lot of them, I just don't think I could sing them because they're really high. What's a good example? Going underground, it's difficult to sing and difficult to fucking play and all. I know there's a lot of things that other people would like to hear, but I can't really do them justice. I mean, it's different with songs like, say, That's Entertainment or Town Called Malice, because they've become almost like public domain. Like, they're not really my songs anymore. I get off on that energy or the buzz of people loving those songs so much. But I can't go the whole way and do everything they want to hear, partly because I just can't. But it wouldn't interest me to do it either. Okay, let's go ahead and hear some of those songs. And coming in at number one, the number one song voted by Mojo Magazine is That's Entertainment. The Jam, Sound Effects, 1980. There were two movies released with the title That's Entertainment in the mid-70s, both That's Entertainment and That's Entertainment Part 2, were compilation films intended to celebrate the 50th anniversary of MGM Studios, bringing together the most spectacular song and dance highlights from an American studio that was the home to Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, Judy Garland, and Sid Charisse. As a result, that phrase and its associated tune of assertive fun could be regularly glimpsed on posters and in adverts throughout the UK between 1974 and 1977, offering an unknowing, ironic commentary on the economic depression of the period and informing the embittered mindset of a younger generation who doubtless associated escapist Hollywood musicals with an older and possibly more blessed generation. And here's a little bit of that song by The Jam, That's Entertainment.
Turn.
and voted number two by Mojo Magazine, the song My Ever-Changing Moods, the Style Council single, 1984. Well or new, he had a great title. It allowed him to be both lyrically philosophical about the pendulum swings of love and life, and musically self-referential. Mood changing was the Style Council's modus operandi. They even released two different versions of this song. On the single, the burbling combo of organ, congos, and wah-wah beneath the stair-stepping tandem vocal with D.C. Lee catches Curtis Mayfield, Gil Scott-Heron, and Classics 4, and somehow the whole bittersweet joy of being alive. And here's a little bit of this song, a song by the Style Council titled My Ever-Changing Moods. Number three, Going Underground by The Jam. The Jam's early years, conservatism expunged. Recorded 8 months after Margaret Thatcher became UK Prime Minister, this thunderous State of the Nation address was instantly embraced, giving The Jam their first UK number one. Weller rails charismatically against a population that has seemingly opted for militarism over kidney machines. Underscored by Bruce Faxton's exhilarating, emphatic bass playing, Defiance and Going Underground are echoed in 2024 film Blitz, where Weller plays a groovy granddad demanding tube access for all as Nazi bombs fall. And here is some of the song Going Underground by The Jam.
Some people might say my life is in a rut. I'm quite happy with what I've got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can see the same things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys brigade. I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course I don't mind. To my nuclear tanks was for Tommy Wines. And the public gets what the public wants, but I want nothing, this society does. I'm going underground, where the prospects play up, start to pack. Going underground, where the boys all sing, let the boys all shout for tomorrow. Some people might get some pleasure out of hate me, I've been enough for it in my fate. People
might need and chosen as number four, Town Called Malice by The Jam, off the album The Gift, 1982. Kitchen sink Brit soul drama, par excellence. The title punned Neville Schultz's 1950 novel, A Town Like Alice. Weller hadn't read it, and the groove copped You Can't Hurry Love. But Town Called Malice was really all about the lyric and rousing melodies, painting a grim, if gently surreal portrait of early 80s small town life, working or anywhere. Its writer wasn't just railing against his environment, but rallying for socialist change. Great personalization of imagery too in The Ghost of a Steam Train Echoing Down My Track. And here's a little bit of Town Called Mellis by The Jam. And the song Mojo Magazine picked as the Paul Weller song number 5 is You Do Something to Me. This is Paul Weller from Stanley Road, 1995. Stand up for a standard. Amid the upswing of his early solo renaissance, Weller sculpted what may be his most enduring ballad. Easy to forget, though, that for all the smoochy tempo and titular ardor, it's an uneasy study in unattainable love. To a tortured, upward-circling piano riff befitting of an existential Nick Cave hand-wringer, Weller declares himself hanging on the wire for love I'll never find, and desperately needing to feel real again. Coincidentally or not, the author would be divorced from his first wife, D.C. Lee, within 3 years. And here's some of the song from Paul Weller titled, You Do Something to Me.
Something to me, something deep inside. I'm hanging on the wire for love I'll never find. Do something wonderful. Chase it all away. Mixing my emotions, throws me back again. Hanging on the wire, yeah. I'm waiting for the change.
And those are the top 5 Paul Weller songs that Mojo Magazine picked. And the Classic Album Review this week is one of my favorites, as possibly yours as well. Steely Dan, Pretzel Logic, 1974. Before Donald Fagen and Walter Becker became the songwriting duo behind Steely Dan, they were tunesmiths with ABC, penning hits for such notables as Barbra Streisand. After carving their own sound with Can't Buy a Thrill and taking it further with Countdown to Ecstasy, the pair returned to Tin Pan Alley. Using 3-minute pop as a framework, they decided to play ironic games with style and genre. The result was the platinum-selling Pretzel Logic. The opening track typifies the album. Ricky, Don't Lose That Number is an affecting story of Unrequited Love, which switches between light samba and piano ballad, until Jeff Skunk Baxter's beautifully phrased guitar solo shoots a thread of California country rock straight through the middle. Here's some of the song Ricky Don't Lose That Number from Steely Dan off of their album Pretzel Logic.
We hear you're leaving, that's okay. I thought a little wild time had just begun. I guess you kind of scared yourself, you turn and run. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't wanna call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself. Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only.
Broadly, in the same vein, any major dude will tell you is illuminated by beams of Orange County sunshine. And here's some of that song, Any Major Dude Will Tell You, from Steely Dan off Pretzel Logic.
I never seen you looking so bad, my funky one. Tell me that your superfine mind has come undone. Any major dude with half a heart surely will tell you, my friend. Any minor world that breaks apart falls together again. When the demon is at your door, in the morning it won't be there no more. Any major dude will tell you. Any major dude will tell you. Have you ever seen?
But the group had not forgotten how to bite either. Monkey in Your Soul, which somehow crosses No Coward with Stax, is a wonderfully bitchy, poison pen letter, while the wounded pestilence of envy is given darkly comic treatment in Through with Buzz. The third element of the album is witty Pache. The defiance of the lonely man is given cop show dynatism in Night by Night, while the bungled homicide of With a Gun should be made into a Coen Brothers movie. And here's a little bit of that song, With a Gun, by Steely Dan, off the album Pretzel Logic.
I could be wrong, but I have seen your face before. You were the man that I saw running from his door. You owed him money, but you gave him something more. With a gun, with a gun, you will be what you are just the same. Did you pay the other man with the piece in your hand and leave him lying in the rain? You were the founders of the clinic in the hill until he caught you with your fingers in the tail. He slapped your hand so you settled up your. With a gun, with a gun, you will be what you are just the same. Did you pay the other man with the piece in your hand?
try to call me when they finally run you down. Just give fair warning any time you come around. With a gun. With a gun.
East St. Louis, Tootaloo, is playtime for the band and notable for introducing pedal steel guitar to the ragtime genre, if nothing else. And here's a little bit of that song, East St. Louis, Tootaloo, by Steely Dan from the Pretzel Logic album. And once again, unfortunately, we're all out of time. Please join me next week when I read articles from the April 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. If you're a big Genesis fan like I am, I'm reading the cover story about the 50th anniversary of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. And then a classic album review of First Take by Roberta Flack. Until then, this is Andy Bombeck for Mojo Music saying so long and keep rocking.